It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As we talk about art exhibits, I just want to say thank you to everyone who turned out for the WPR listener meetup last week at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in beautiful Winona. It was a wonderful evening of mingling with WPR friends and supporters, and we were surrounded by just gorgeous art. I particularly was moved by the works of Anne Leibovitz, who grew up on Lake Superior. Her piece, Water Stories, mesmerizing. It's rich, blue, watery color field. It caught my eye all evening. Exhibit is Water Stories, on display through the end of January. And thank you, Marine Art Museum, for being such gracious hosts of our WPR event. Join in on art exhibits that have moved you lately. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Allie Wilbur is here, curator of public programs for the Museum of Wisconsin Art. She's the event lead for Bloomin', which runs through Sunday. Allie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. So flower arrangements, live flower arrangements, not so typical art pieces in museums. Why use live flowers for an exhibit?
Well, they should be incorporated in more museums. We recently had a different exhibition that included floral arrangements throughout the galleries, and it's an extremely lovely addition to the event or to the exhibition. So we started Bloomin' Holidays. I mean, first of all, it's really lovely to see floral arrangements at this time of year in fall as leaves are falling and colors are changing. Kind of seeing that that greenery in those florals is really uplifting. But I think it brings in a new audience who may not have the most comfortable relationship with contemporary art, but they do have a relationship with floral arrangements to come and appreciate the artistry of floral arranging, because I'm giving these floral artists, these florists, free rein to create whatever they want to create. It's a little different than being hired for a wedding event or something like that. They get to just completely go all out and make something beautiful.
You're building also on a decade of this exhibition. I'm curious, are there any creative boundaries that these floral arrangements kind of have met for newness or freshness and creativity with what you can do with flowers?
I've specifically, since taking on the event, tried to be more lax with the rules and the boundaries. I want them to create something big and amazing. So we have been offering a monetary stipend to the florist to help cover costs, because I know how expensive that this process can be. I mean, obviously we need to be protecting the art first and foremost. So no bugs and, minimal like water in the galleries and being respectful of the artworks. Other than that, I want to see, what they can come up with and what they want to do. And some of them have really stepped up to the plate for that. This year we had a woman completely destroy a deer decoy. She melted it and created a sculpture and filled it with flowers. So that's something that's waiting for you at MOA if you choose to come see the exhibition this weekend.
You also have a Milwaukee-based muralist, Emma Daisy, with an exhibit. Can you describe the animation?
Yeah, so another thing we've been trying to do is the front side of MOA's building are these white brick wall, and it's kind of a perfect platform for projection. So we've been trying to uplift some video and virtual artists living within Wisconsin for the past 4 years or so. Emma Daisy, you can see her floral murals all throughout Milwaukee, and she created a digital animation of a floral mural, essentially, for our wall. So that's projected from 6 to 10 p.m. tonight through Sunday night. Luminous.
Yes, and you also have this 20-foot white vinyl flower piece. What, hand-stitched? What is this?
This is by Madison artist Leslie EY, who's absolutely amazing. You should look her up. But you should come see the tulip in real life. There are four gigantic white vinyl tulips she created and stitched herself, and they are absolutely show-stopping.
Hmm. We're talking about the Bloomin' exhibit at an annual exhibit, and Allie Wilbur is the event lead for Bloomin' at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. You can join in on art exhibits that you have loved recently, 800-642-1234. Allie, you also have workshops along the way, edible lavender pressed petals, and you also have one on a Japanese art arrangement, the Ikebana workshop 101. Can you explain a little bit about the art of floral arranging, the Japanese art, what we could learn from that?
Yeah, so Ikebana is usually one of the highlight when we have an Ikebana florist in this Bloomin' celebration. Those are very popular pieces. So it's kind of the art of, I want to say, like minimalism, you know, like very particular arrangement of the flowers using minimal supplies and florals, but very well balanced and kind of a meditative floral installation. And that class sadly is full because it's so popular, it filled up right away. We do still have openings for the lavender class, cooking with lavender, the pressed petals class, and then there's one on making a door hanging floral piece.
How can we use pressed petals as art? What could we learn there?
Oh, well, not throwing away a bouquet, maybe, after it started to, you know, lose its petals. Really commonly what people do is they use their maybe bridal bouquet or a floral arrangement they received for a special occasion, and then they press the florals, and then they're preserved and behind glass and protected.
What happens to the floral arrangements on display when they come down? Can you give us a sneak peek as to how this exhibit breaks down?
Yeah, so our two most popular events of the year are Bloomin' and then Art and Chalk Fest. And I think florals and chalk both share that ephemeral nature of you have to come and appreciate it while it's up for the 3 days because it can't last forever. So, you know, the florals do eventually wilt and die. They're all real florals. So some of them might be given a second life. Some of them might be dried and pressed and whatnot. But the florists take them back. Some of them donate them to the museum. I've adopted one or two in my time.
I love it. How do you think, you said at the top, it's really nice to have the floral arrangement, live flowers, as part of the museum spaces. What do they do to museum spaces?
I think they bring a little bit of life into museum spaces. I mean, I'm particularly, you know, I'm a millennial, so maybe we're just obsessed with plants and flowers, but, you know, I think it brings in a different texture and a different life to the artwork that's around it. And I like seeing artwork in thought about in different ways, whether that's food or florals or music or something like that, and ways that we can work with an oil painting to bring inspiration through these different mediums and to feel them in new ways.
Allie, thank you for joining us. Happy Bloomin'.
Thank you.
Allie Wilbur is curator of public programs for the Museum of Wisconsin Art. The Bloomin' exhibit starts today. Got to see those flowers while they're alive. Runs through Sunday in West Bend. And for disclosure, the Museum of Wisconsin Art is a business sponsor of WPR. Up next in our art tour, an exhibit out of Milwaukee called Jews in Space, Celebrating the Jewish Relationship to the Extraterrestrial. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore art exhibits around our state. The Jewish Museum Milwaukee launched an exhibit that tells the story of Jewish relationships with the extraterrestrial and outer space. It's called Jews in Space, Members of the Tribe in Orbit. Give a shout out to art exhibitions you've taken in recently, what you thought of them, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Molly Dubin is here, curator of Jewish Museum Milwaukee. Molly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, tell us about Jews in Space, the overarching story of this exhibit, the narrative. What goes on in this exhibit?
so much goes on in this exhibit. It's really exciting. It's such a fascinating topic. And as you so aptly said, the exhibit really talks about the epic story of the Jewish relationship with outer space from ancient times to the present. And I think one of the most exciting things about this exhibit, it allows audiences from all different backgrounds and areas of interest to approach this topic, whether they're interested in kind of ancient books and artifacts that talk about the Jewish connection to the Hebrew calendar. Of course, the Hebrew calendar is based on the lunar cycle. So from the very beginnings of antiquity, we have the Jewish people looking to the skies to determine when holidays and observances fall. So early on, astronomy becomes very central to Jewish practice and then continues. So whether that's your entry point or you're interested in hearing about Hugo Gernsback, who was an immigrant from Luxembourg, the father of sci-fi. He actually coined the term science fiction and started the first publication called Amazing Stories that began publication in 1929 that was completely, you know, committed to publishing and sharing stories about sci-fi and fantasy, or to looking at a timeline that really looks at this whole connection dating back to 300 BC to present time, looking at incredible accomplishments, contributions, some of the amazing astronauts that have made such amazing impacts, to the pop culture connection, which is really fascinating. We look at things like, you know, Leonard Nimoy, who of course played Dr. Spock on the original Star Trek.
Trekkies will like this exhibit too. Trek memorabilia going on.
Right. And a lot of people, I don't think, know that very well-known hand gesture with the, you know, splitting of the fingers, which is the Vulcan salute, live long and prosper, really has origins in a Jewish blessing for a congregation. And Leonard Nimoy, who of course is Jewish, grew up in Boston, recalled well before Star Trek was even kind of an idea, attending synagogue and seeing this really interesting prayer taking place with these hands being extended out over the congregation in blessing. And all this time later, he look to that as inspiration, and that becomes the incredibly well-known and emulated Vulcan salute. So
I feel like this exhibit, Molly, is, and I know this is weird, but it's kind of like this onion, and you just keep pulling back layers of how, you know, Jewish people are interested in astrology with science and invention. And it really is pulling the brain, I think, in a lot of different directions, that connections we just didn't make.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that was one of the main things that drew us to this exhibit. And certainly it's one that literally affects all of mankind. So, you know, it's this topic that no matter what your point of entry or area of interest, I think is something that brings people together and allows us to look at, you know, as I mentioned, some of these great astronautic contributions. Just to mention a few, Jeffrey Hoffman, who was the first Jewish American man in orbit, who is known for many things, including repairs on the Hubble telescope, but he took many Judaic objects into space. He took a Torah into space. He celebrated Hanukkah, took a dreidel, and tried to determine if there were different rules for playing the game in zero gravity. So you have a dreidel spinning for an hour. Pretty amazing. You know, people like David Wolfe, who became the first American to vote from space in 1997, with the midterm elections coming up, I feel like if someone can vote from space, then we can all get there to do it. And of course, we look at some of the fantastic women that have made contributions. That's another great thing about this exhibit, is we look at, you know, the fact that so many more girls from a young age are being encouraged to get into STEM studies and to aspire to have careers like being a genetic or a physicist or a astronaut. So you have people like Nancy Grace Roman, who is known as the mother of Hubble, was the first woman executive at NASA, to Judith Resnick, who was the first Jewish American and the first Jewish woman of any nationality to go into space. And then, of course, a woman who's been in the news lately, not only due to her incredible accomplishments, but Jessica Meir, who is connected to the Artemis Project. Mm. And if she is selected to be part of that, which she most likely will, that will make her the first woman to walk on the moon. So those incredible, pieces of information. And then maybe one of the most amazing, unique things that we have that was made possible by a Milwaukee-based company named Illuminati, spelled differently from the Illuminati that people may be coming to mind thinking about, but they create immersive virtual reality environments. So in our gallery, we have this dome, this portal that enables visitors, and it's completely user-driven, to traverse the universe. So at your fingertips, you can go to the Milky Way, you can explore the solar system, all the planets, you can go on a satellite ride along. Illuminati works with OpenSpace, which is a company that creates software that enables some of these virtual reality experiences, and they work closely with NASA. So through this kind of partnership, you have data sets that are being made available to the public that would never have been made available before. So if people in real time want to look at the wildfire situation on the West Coast, or they want to look at, you know, recent flooding in Nigeria, or you want to look at things like global warming or carbon dioxide levels, that's all at your fingertips. Wow. And it's all in real time, which is extraordinary.
Molly Dubin with us, curator of the Jewish Museum Milwaukee. Current exhibit is Jews in Space, Members of the Tribe in Orbit, runs through February 5th. You can join in on art exhibits that move you here in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Molly, you touched on this very briefly, but I think this exhibit has these rare rabbinic volumes on astronomy in like Hebrew and German and Yiddish from the 1700s. Is that right?
Yeah, the exhibit concept was originated by some colleagues on the East Coast at the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research and the Center for Jewish History. And in their collections, they have some incredibly old tomes and archival material, including books that date back to the early 1700s that, you know, talk about this connection between Judaism and the final frontier. And of course, the lunar calendar. Look at, you know, responses that people are grappling, you know, from the earliest of times, wondering about that final frontier and what is the connection and how can we better understand it. So we have some of those books in, as you mentioned, several different languages, which is an amazing thing to be able to share with the public.
How can you interact with them, with these books? Are they behind glass? Like how, you know, what is that like to be able to see them?
The books themselves aren't a case because okay. They're very fragile, yes, and very yes. old, but we have some great didactic material that explains some of the diagrams, some of the, you know, the topics that are being explored, some of the individuals behind these, you know, these inquiries, these responses. So that is available. And we have a great deal of didactic material throughout that helps people to connect, as well as, you know, bringing their own experiences, which so many people will do because of the interest in this topic. And we also hope people will engage through many of our public programs. We always create a slate of public programs that allow us to delve a little deeper. One coming right up here, but December 1st, we didn't mention Mel Brooks, who of course has done some films that are parodies looking at outer space. And really has used that throughout his career in terms of comedic material. So we have Patrick McGilligan, who is a biographer of Mel Brooks, wrote a book called Funny Man, Mel Brooks. He's going to be here December 1st, really kind of pulling the curtain back to look at, you know, the beginnings of Mel Brooks' comedic career and some of the influences and some of his really unique experiences.
So you got some companion programming with this exhibit. Molly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
Molly Dubin, curator of Jewish Museum Milwaukee. The Jews in Space exhibit runs through February 5th. For disclosure, the Jewish Museum Milwaukee is a business sponsor of WPR. And up next, we touch down in Manitowoc, home of the Rahr West Museum, about the art of table setting. Join in 800-642-1234. Your favorite exhibits and why. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We go around the state taking in museum exhibits. Shannon in Minocqua called, couldn't stay with us, and they recommend the 47th annual Birds and Art exhibit, open now until November 27th at the Leahyaki Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. Thank you, Shannon, for that shout out of such a long-running tradition at that museum. Now to Rahr West Museum in Manitowoc, which has welcomed people to create tablescapes inspired by works of art. Another long-running tradition, the Art of Table Setting exhibit, long history at the museum, runs through Sunday. Join in on art exhibitions you wish to highlight, ones that you take in. 800-642-1234. Greg Vadney is here, Executive Director of the Rahr West Art Museum and immediate past president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. Greg, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Great talking with you again. And I want to first just reiterate before I start talking about the Rahr West, the Leahyaki Woodson and Birds and Art is such a wonderful exhibit and a tradition. And I wanted to give a quick congratulations to the outgoing director, Kathy Kelsey Foley, who announced her retirement just a short while ago. She's going to be finishing up an amazing tenure there at the end of this year. So congratulations and thank you,
Kathy. Oh, that's such a kind tribute. Thank you so much for that.
Well, we're good.
You're good eggs. You're good eggs.
Of museum people. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Art of Table Setting. That started nearly 50 years ago. Why did Ruth West organize this exhibit around table setting?
Well, I believe it involved her love of gardening. She was a master gardener, and love of art. She was a great patron of our institution and to art museums throughout the state and beyond. And she also enjoyed hosting people. And so the idea of creating a table setting and merging it with art, in some cases from the Rahr West Art Museum's collection, and in some cases art from beyond the collection, made a lot of sense to her back in the early 1970s. And it still continues to make sense to us right now.
How do you put this exhibit together? How does it work?
Well, one of the beautiful things about the exhibit and the Rahr West is we are part of the city of Manitowoc. So we're a department of the city. We're a public museum. And we are obligated, mission-driven, to support and include artists of all kinds from our community. And in this case, it's community designers, individuals who apply to create these tablescapes. And in doing so, they're going to give us an idea of their theme, what types of selections they're going to have, both with art, but also the actual things that set the table, you know, whether it's glassware, china, or stemware, or flatware, any of that kind of stuff. It's all interconnected. So the idea is that we merge those things into a specific vignette.
One of those
through the years, I should mention too. Through the years, I should mention that we have not selected an overall theme yearly. Uh-huh. So when you come to the museum, you're going to get a bunch of individual themes in each section, and we do that purposely to give the freedom to our local designers to create and not be encumbered.
To create an Andy Warhol theme, you've got one of those.
Yeah, in one
in
case,
the mix.
Yes, yeah, we had sent you some images, and last year one of the highlights was an Andy Warhol theme. And obviously, if you had Andy Warhol, you're serving soup. it included some artwork. We have an original Warhol in our collection that was included in it, along with some of the designer's own collection of Warhol prints.
How do you incorporate wall art pieces from the Rar West collection or other collections into the table space of dishware and glassware and flatware? I mean, how does something on the wall translate to what you're building, on the table? Describe that interaction.
Well, fortunately, I don't have to do it as much as the designers have to really think about the connection. And it can be extremely successful in merging an idea, and maybe it's just a component of the art piece that allows for an artist to create essentially a still life that's based off of the artwork. And I should say that the artwork, more often than not, is not a still life. However, one great example from a few years ago was from a tremendous local artist who created a still life of his table setting. So he had done the table setting first and then painted it as a still life. So you had the still life right in front of the table setting.
Playing tricks on the brain there. What is your favorite table setting in this year's exhibit?
Oh, this year's exhibit, we have a specific one that has an outdoor theme. And one of the beautiful things about the art of table settings with all of the different vignettes is that it reminds us that meals are a gathering, and they can happen anywhere, and they can happen, people assume you're going to have fine china and flowers and enough forks and knives that I'm not going to know the etiquette of which one to pick up. But that's not always the case. When a meal is something that is shared, sometimes not shared. Sometimes you're out in the wilderness. In this particular one, it's a wilderness scene. And to think about somebody out there, maybe alone with their thoughts and emotions, enjoying the most human of things, which is the meal.
Those are
so wonderful. And that's one of the beautiful things about these individual vignettes is that some of them will not speak to a guest, but a visitor will come across a single one and suddenly it will click with them. And it's a beautiful thing for the art of table settings.
You're breaking up just a little bit here. I'm going to reintroduce you, Greg, for a moment as we talk about how table setting can be artistic with Museum Director Greg Vadney here, Executive Director of the Rar West Art Museum in Manitowoc. The art of table setting is asking people to set a table inspired by a piece of art. You can join in 800-642-1234. I want to look a little more at that connection, Greg. How is sharing a meal connected to artistry and creativity and what people see on the table?
Yeah, the designers do a wonderful job of merging those two things and really evoking, as I had said, I think I broke up a little bit, about connecting people with the act of the meal, which is the most human of things. The fact that everyone has a memory that is organized around a meal. It might be something like Thanksgiving from years ago. It might be something about sitting with somebody who's in pain and sharing food with them. But there's something about sitting with somebody and sharing that meal that is ultimately human. And artwork is a way of evoking human emotion. And so the connection between the two is natural.
there's a presentation with the exhibit, the presentation on using family heirloom dishes and giving the dishes new life. How can people give heirloom dishes new life?
Well, Mary Verley, a local artist and designer, did that. And she talked about how you can, you know, so many of us have either an old handed down china collection,
yes,
or somebody is trying to get rid of their china collection and they don't, because generationally we don't want china that much, and she gave us some great ideas of creating artwork with that. So whether it's creating mobiles that are made of those, or wall hangings, and that was the type of things she talked about, these handed down things that sometimes people don't want handed down to them can be reused in an artistic and design forward way to really not only brighten our homes and our spaces, but remind us and connect us to generations that came before us that collected this stuff.
And if you put that together and see it on display, that is more meaningful than if you keep that china tucked away in the cabinet above the refrigerator and you rarely ever look at it.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that myself.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you collect these things because you want to honor the people that came before you who really love china. But if you're only breaking it out maybe once a year, if that, you're not really doing it the service that it deserves.
Greg, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Great to talk with you, too.
Greg Vadney is Executive Director of RAR West Art Museum, immediate past president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, the Art of Table Setting exhibit, and Sunday. And up next, we head to Eau Claire to learn about student-centered art in a juried competition. Join in at 800-642-1234. Your favorite art museums, exhibits that have caused you pause or you've gone back to year after year. 800-642-1234. Give a shout out. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
You turn to Wisconsin Public Radio for programs that feed your mind and your soul. Information, connection, inspiration, you get it all on Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support makes the programming possible, and if you have investments, you can help by donating stock. Talk to your broker or find out more at wpr.org/stock. Thank you for your generosity.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for exploring art exhibits in Wisconsin with us. Join in on exhibitions that have moved you. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We have Amanda Bulger now, Gallery Director of the Ruth Foster Gallery at UW-Eau Claire, which is showcasing the 66th annual Juried Student Art Show with work from UW-Eau Claire and UW-Eau Claire Barron County students. Runs until November 16th. Amanda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, last night was the award ceremony for the art show. How did it go?
Oh, it went great. It's so fun to see all the students come in. They bring their roommates and their friends, and some of them bring their family members to celebrate their work. But we had some really great pieces of artwork that we were able to celebrate with a few different awards, which ultimately helps encourage those students to just keep making, keep producing. You're on the right track and you're doing something really interesting.
What do you see as the value of having a student-centered gallery?
It functions as a learning opportunity for students. As a university gallery, ultimately, a lot of what we do should be about teaching students, helping them in their degree, and thinking about what type of knowledge they'll gain as they can take forward and work outside of the university. So it gave them opportunities as they were preparing for the exhibition to think about how do we actually frame artwork? If it's not meant to go in a frame, how do I make this weird sculpture fit on the wall and hang like it's supposed to? They think about how their artwork might read differently now that it's taken away from the environment that it was created in and hanging next to other pieces. Again, really helping them think about not just the making, but how the viewer gets to read their work as well.
And explain, how does the juried art show work? What is it like?
Every year, because this is our 66th annual, so we've been doing it for a little while. Every year we invite students across campus to submit artwork that a national juror will come in and select from those submissions which pieces they actually want to be in the gallery. So I think it's a great opportunity because you don't have to be an art student at the university. You just have to be a student here. So it gives students who maybe aren't studying art an opportunity to continue with something that they're also passionate about that doesn't fit in with their major. But then those who are art majors or minors get to see their artwork in a professional art gallery. So a juror looks through those selections. They choose the pieces that they want to be in the exhibition, thinking about how big the gallery is and how much work it can actually fit. And then the students prepare their artwork for exhibition. They bring it to the gallery. We install it for them. And then they come back again to see it once it's all hung up.
What does a judge or judges look for in a juried art show when there's such a wide range of artistic expressions that are coming to you or are before your eyes?
Yeah. Some of the things that the juror might look for is just merit, like how strong is the piece, how technically skilled is the artist. Other things they might look for are just ideas. Do they see that the student is working towards an interesting idea? And do we want to encourage them to keep pursuing it? So maybe the piece isn't as strong as it could be, but they're headed in the right direction. So you want to take that work so they know they're doing something good and they should keep going. They might start to notice some themes around some of the works and try to balance out some of those themes. And they also take into consideration the material that's used. So they might want to make sure they have some paintings in there and they've included some photography and there's some 3D work so that all areas are really represented.
I wonder thematically what is on the mind of these college age artists and creators. I wonder what's coming up through in their art, you know, as we, that is a reflection of what is around them in society as we live through a pandemic and so many other things that our world is going through. What is coming up in their art?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And actually, that's one of the great things about a juried show is it really reflects on what's happening right now versus a themed show. You know, people are making artwork around a theme or they're pulling from older work that they made that is around that theme. But in a juried show, it's really about the work that people are making right now. And so we do see a lot of pieces that deal with handling inner emotions and the turmoil that people are experiencing with coming out of this pandemic, thinking about what it likes to be or what it feels like to be more secluded and disconnected from others. But on the other side, we see some pieces that are fun and they're trying to invite more interaction with the viewers and trying to bring some joy back into our lives.
Hmm. Amanda Bulger with us, Gallery Director of the Ruth Foster Gallery at UW-Eau Claire, as we explore the 66th Annual Juried Student Art Show Award Ceremony last night. You can join in on art exhibits that have moved you, 800-642-1234. Amanda, let's talk specifically about some of the pieces here. One is titled Infatuation, False Image. Can you tell us what's going on in this piece?
Yes. So this piece is by a junior student, Jess Kemstra. She took condoms mostly because of their durability and relationship to other types of balloon forms, but also their ability to both, when overfilled with air, start to represent both the male and female body. But she dips them in a mixture of wood glue and food coloring so that you have this very delicate cast around them and then hangs them within the space. So the longer they hang, the more this delicate cast breaks down and they start to fall and crumble crumble to the ground. And it connects with that idea of infatuation, that when you meet someone, or maybe you haven't met them yet, but you know the idea of them, and you're really intrigued by them. But the more you get to know them, the more this false image that you created about that person starts to break down, and you're left with the real crumbs of what that person is. And that's what that piece is trying to represent in the gallery. It's also a fun piece because people get to physically touch it and watch it crumble. So last night it was great in the reception to see everyone trying to break these pieces down even further as they created this glittering pile across the floor.
It's like the opposite you think of with art that normally we can't touch. You know, Street Food of the Stars, this painting, why was this piece chosen for the exhibit? What is going on in this piece?
This piece is by Connor Shibsted. He's a senior illustration student who's getting ready to graduate. He said that he's really interested in ideas of people watching and creating weird narratives around segments of stories that you overhear by strangers as they're passing, and trying to take these partial narratives and these weird characteristics you see from strangers that come from people watching and create these new narratives within the artwork that start to explore these odd stories. So he's interested in creating something that kind of connects a little bit of realism, but also this comic style, and allows the viewer to start to investigate these odd narratives that he's starting to create.
I wonder, Amanda, you know, sometimes English majors get a bad rap, but how, and I would think it would extend to art majors as well. How do these student artists make a career through their artwork? How do they become career artists? And what is that conversation like as we look at the uncertainties of the world with these graduating seniors and inflation?
You know, that's always a hard topic to talk about, because if you're majoring in something like accounting, you have a pretty good understanding of what you're going to do when you leave the university with your degree. So art can be scary, but also art should be exciting because it's not so prescribed that you have to have a specific direction. But being able to investigate creative ideas and think about how to express those ideas is what all businesses want right now. How can they be creative to set themselves apart from other businesses and be more successful? So even if an art student who's studying painting doesn't end up making paintings for the rest of their life, what they are doing is building these creative problem-solving skills that make them a strong asset no matter what they want to do after graduation. So maybe they choose to be an artist who continues to show in galleries for the rest of their career. Or maybe they find their niche in working with social media and selling things online. Or maybe they build a company where they can combine their creative skills with a product that people want or need. Or maybe they just take that creative problem-solving skill and they push it forward into being this incredibly strong asset for any type of business.
So many possibilities. Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you again.
Amanda Bulger is gallery director of the Ruth Foster Gallery at UW-Eau Claire. 66th annual Juried Student Art Show runs through November 16th. And earlier, we had leaders of three other art exhibits in the state. You can find links to all of the museums we talked about, wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.